the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's Friday and Dan Hoost is here with the latest from Monticello and Sullivan County Government Legislature. They met yesterday and we'll find out what's in store. Plus, it's been more than a week since New York State lawmakers missed their April 1st deadline to reach an agreement on this year's budget, and lawmakers have left the Capitol for the week. We'll get the latest from the New York Public News Network. An environmental fight that seemed to have ended years ago is back in the spotlight. It's about a proposed gas pipeline that President Trump says he wants to build in New York. And the Hawley Fire Department is hosting their model train show and sale this weekend. We'll get a preview. And our Spring Fund Drive ends today. You can help us donate now at 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. Now the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Stocks opened mixed this morning after a better-than-expected report on wholesale inflation. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down about a point in early trading.
Wholesale prices fell by 0.4% last month, echoing Thursday's good news about cooling inflation at the retail level. That progress on prices could be stalled, however, by President Trump's trade war. China says it's raising its own tariffs on U.S. exports to 125%. Authorities say that's as high as China's likely to go. Tariffs at that level put a halt to most trading, so any additional taxes have little effect. J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon's warning of considerable turbulence ahead for the economy and says the bank is setting aside more money to cover possible loan defaults. The bank also says Chase credit card holders are cutting back on travel spending and stockpiling goods in an effort to avoid tariffs. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
While President Trump has put a temporary pause on some tariffs, many others remain in place. That includes a 25% tariff on imported cars that kicked in last week. But cars that are on the lots right now are not affected by the tariffs. NPR's Camilla Domonoske explains that leaves would-be car buyers with a choice.
Last month was the best month for new car sales in 4 years. Cars already on dealer lots aren't affected by tariffs. That's a few months' supply, and in fact, some companies are offering deals. Kira Ney was planning to get a car next year.
But with the tariffs and so much of the uncertainty about that, we just decided that we couldn't wait any longer.
She says the dealership was packed when she and her husband bought their new SUV. Of course, if prices go up, as expected in the coming months, sales will slow. And while new car prices aren't up yet, used car prices are already starting to rise. Camila Domonoske, NPR News.
The U.S. Supreme Court says the Trump administration must, quote, facilitate the return of an immigrant wrongly deported to El Salvador. But the court sent the case of Kumar Abrego Garcia back to the lower court trial judge. The justice has said the lower court judge needs to clarify her meaning. She had ordered the Trump administration to, quote, effectuate the man's return. NPR's Joel Rose says the judge responded to the high court's direction immediately.
Judge Polizzini's issued a new revised order clarifying that the government needs to take, quote, all steps to facilitate the return of Abrego Garcia, unquote, to the U.S. as soon as possible. Zinis wants to know his current physical location and status, what steps the government has taken to bring him back, and what additional steps they are considering. And she's called a hearing for later today in Maryland. So Judge Zinis is not wasting any time.
NPR's Joel Rose reporting. The Justice Department is trying to delay today's hearing until next week. On Wall Street, the Dow is now down about 60 points. This is NPR. New York City authorities say six people were killed yesterday when a sightseeing helicopter crashed into the Hudson River. Five members of a family from Spain died, along with the aircraft pilot. A passerby filmed the helicopter tumbling out of the sky, apparently without one of its rotor blades. A hurricane recovery effort in western North Carolina is among some of the programs halted by the Trump administration's latest cuts, NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports.
Plans to survey Buncombe County residents affected by Hurricane Helene were scrapped last Tuesday. Workers at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention coordinating it were fired. And state and local officials couldn't find out whether residents still struggle to access health care or clean water, for example. Zach Moore is an epidemiologist with North Carolina's health department.
Beyond hurricanes, they do radiation preparedness, toxicology issues, surveillance for illnesses in Red Cross shelters after a disaster. So having them instantly disbanded is going to leave a big gap.
He says it's just one example of how federal agency cuts will affect local communities. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News.
Scientists say there will be a micro moon this weekend. It will be the smallest, farthest, and faintest full moon spied so far this year. It will rise Saturday night. Having trouble seeing it clearly? You can view it online at the Virtual Telescope Project. They'll be able to zoom in. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Amazon Business, offering business buying services from office supplies to IT essentials and maintenance tools to help bring visions to life. Learn more at AmazonBusiness.com. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Dan Hoost is standing by, and we'll get to him in just a second, but I want to update you on our spring fun drive. Today is the final day of the drive, and we are at 93% of our goal, which is great. We just need to get to the 100% of our goal, just about $4,000 to go. To help us on the way, we have a challenge this hour during Radio Chatskill from the Calicoon Business Association. It's a $250 challenge. Thank you to the Calicoon Business Association for that. So it's a matching challenge, and that means we need to raise the $250 to get the $250. That then becomes $500 on the Wheel of Progress. That means we'll have only $3,500. You know how this works. 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org to make that donation and help us close out this drive. We're going to close it out today. Just depends on what time we land this plane. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. And as we do every Friday, we check in with Dan Hoost, the communications director from Sullivan County Government, to tell us what's going on in Monticello. There was a legislative meeting yesterday, and we have a couple of updates there. The Human Rights Commission nominees were named. This is the Human Rights Commission that's getting revived here in the county after being dormant for a period.
Yes. We have nine Human Rights Commission members, one from each district nominated by their particular legislator. From District 1, which is Matt McPhillips' district, a gentleman by the name of Joel Santiago. From District 2, that's Nadia Reich's district, Ari Pontier. From District 3, which is Brian McPhillips' district, Amanda Ward, who is our District 8 legislator. From the District 4, which is Nick Salamone, that would be Charlie Wade. District 5, which is Kat Scott, a woman named Margaret Gans. District 6, Louis Alvarez's choice is Bill Liblick. District 7, which is Joe Perello's district, is Ricardo Nieves. District 8, which is Amanda Ward's district, she nominated Miranda Behan. District 9, which is Terry Blosser Bernardo's district, Alex Portugal. And we will have more to share with them when I get a chance to talk to each of them, maybe put out a press release in a few weeks here.
So these are the nominees. They haven't been appointed yet.
Right. Their official appointment will be at the April 24th full board meeting of the legislature. Okay. And by which time, too, we should be able to announce a new executive director, first time in our history, full-time executive director of the Human Rights Commission.
And the process, the way this works, is that each of these legislators nominate someone, and mm-hmm. then that's approved by the entire
legislature.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of debate about some of these candidates.
There was.
Particularly Amanda Ward, who serves as a legislator, but then being nominated by someone else to serve on the commission. What was the back and forth there?
The debate really was centered on, depending on who you talk to, Amanda felt personally targeted by some of her peers who were questioning the legitimacy of having a legislator sitting on the Human Rights Commission. It is not prohibited, but it's not specifically allowed, as in there are other extra legislature boards that legislators are specifically said to serve on. So Nadia, Kat, I think we're questioning because of a legislator's innate power, because of being a legislator, should they be on the Human Rights Commission. Amanda felt, and so did other legislators like Brian, who nominated her, took that very personally, felt that that was unfair and improper targeting. And so there was quite a debate about it. Very personal, very searing. If you want to see it, you can see it. I'm not going to recount too much of it, but it's there for everyone to watch to understand both sides of that argument. From what I can tell, I think Amanda will be sitting on the commission. And one thing that should be noted, and I'm not taking sides on this, but I just want to mention this because it's a common misunderstanding. The Sullivan County Human Rights Commission does not have the authority or the power to investigate any human rights abuses. That rests with the state. And in fact, when we get reports of that, they go to the incoming executive director, who will then, if they need to go farther than that, will forward them to the state. They may make a report to the commission about it, but the commission's role is actually to educate, to do outreach, to be that person that maybe somebody can make the initial report to, but then pass it on to the proper authorities. But really what they're going to be doing is being the ambassadors for human rights in Sullivan County.
And is the commission required by the state?
No.
And so this is a voluntary thing that the legislature is doing.
This is something that past legislatures have said we want to have. It then went defunct for a few years, but there had been for a long time, including in the past legislature, an idea and a desire to bring it back. This legislature has finally accomplished that. And I will add, finally having a full-time executive director. In the past, there's been part-time executive director. And I would say to a person, all of those part-time executive directors would tell you it's a full-time job. Yeah. And that's why they couldn't stay, because it was requiring so much of their time, but not being able to be compensated for that amount of time, they had to find other employment. So this, it'll be exciting. Next time I'm on, I will have a chance to talk about the new executive director.
All right. Also some debate around solid waste, how the county is handling that. Mm-hmm. Flow control. What is flow control and how it's apparently going to be enforced now?
All right. I won't make any jokes about it.
You need to just stay I'm going to on stay, the straight line here. Yes. Straight and narrow.
Yes. So what it is, it's not channeling a river or something like that. It's actually channeling our solid waste stream.
Okay.
And it's going to be actually not going to be. It's been in effect before. We have a law in the administrative code. I believe it's been there for several decades that says any waste generated in Sullivan County must be disposed of in Sullivan County. If you think about it, that's probably an environmentally sound thing as well. However, at the beginning of this year, the legislature had already authorized the increase of tipping fees. They went from $120 for municipal solid waste per ton to just under $137 per ton, and went up to $150 per ton for construction and demolition debris. And what legislators said they had discovered in the interim is now that some of the commercial haulers that serve the county, not all of them, and I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus, but some of them are shipping to Orange County or to Pennsylvania, where tipping fees, the fee charged to dump, are lower. I believe like Orange County, I think, is at $120 a ton. That's technically against county law. It's illegal. It can be, you can be charged with a misdemeanor and face a fine on the first offense of up to $500.
So that's the flow control we're
talking about. Yeah, the flow of the garbage needs to stay within Sullivan County. And then, of course, you know, we'll ship it out from there because we don't have a place to landfill it here. But that's for the county or those who work with the county to do. And so it's something that is of real concern to legislators, because it, in essence, is cheating the taxpayers, is the feeling. That, listen, these tipping fees were raised to more evenly and fairly spread the cost of the solid waste system, which taxpayers have been largely subsidizing, to those who actually use it. And the haulers basically represent those who actually use it. So the idea here was that these increased tipping fees would cover the entire cost of the, or at least close to it, of the solid waste system. But of course, when haulers are bypassing our facilities, those costs cannot be recouped.
So Joe Perilla, one of the legislators, said that they're going to start enforcing that rule more.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what he's chair of the Public Works Committee. He is also vice chair of the legislature, and this was a big topic for him yesterday. In fact, he's trying to call me on the phone right now. Doesn't realize I'm on the radio. I'm seeing my phone light up.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe. Not that he's listening. I'm sure he's at work right now. But the idea is that these haulers need to be compelled to comply, I guess, with the county law. And how that's going to manifest, I don't know exactly how the enforcement is going to happen, but it may involve our sheriff's office, and we'll see where it goes from there. So
I will remind folks that we are speaking to Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government, who joins us every Friday. Also want to remind folks that it's our spring fund drive, the last day of the drive. It's a $5,000 Friday, meaning we need to raise $5,000. And since this morning, we've been doing pretty well. We just have about 4,000 of that to go. And to help us along the way, the folks at the Calicoon Business Association have issued a $250 challenge, and we heard from Ross in Glens Bay. Thank you so much, saying he loves Radio Catskill. Thank you, Ross. We love supporters like you. Want to remind folks that you can still help us meet this challenge and meet this goal on our drive. Donate now. About $190 to go left on the challenge, and about $4,000 overall to meet the goal of the drive. Let's get there. 845-482-4141 or donate at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We are joined by Dan Hoost. This is an interesting development here. The latest sales tax payments down by $1.2 million this year versus this time last year. And those are people paying sales tax. Explain the sales tax payments and what that means, and are folks concerned?
Yeah, there's an 8% sales tax rate in the county on various goods and services. We get 4% of that. The state keeps the other 4%. And so the state, though, collects it all, and then they remit a check to us, I think, every quarter. And the latest payment that we got, our treasurer, Nancy Buck, told legislators yesterday, and she's now updated the number to me. It's actually closer to $1.4 million.
From the state that you haven't received yet?
No. It's the payment we got was $1.4 million less than what we got last year at this time. And we have been watching this with some concern that we do think we sort of hit the peak or plateau of sales tax collection, which thankfully has been exceeding our property tax collection for at least the past few years since the pandemic. But what goes up usually does come down, and now we're looking at that. This is independent of all the issues going on with tariffs and everything. Those really haven't impacted us yet. I'm sure they will. So this is where we're just saying, you know, it may be the big building boom, for example, that we had, because lumber sales were always the leader in that. Maybe that's slacking off now. Automobile sales was the second highest. Maybe that's starting to slack off a little bit.
And this is from first quarter results, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're saying that we know that there's a lot of volatility going in the world right now, specifically this time tariffs, but this is all prior to that.
This is prior to that. So this is a better indication of possibly a longer-term trend. And our county treasurer, Nancy Buck, has always been, she says, I'll be the doom and gloom sayer, because that keeps us fiscally conservative. We're dealing with taxpayers' money, need to keep them in mind. So she's like, is this a trend or is it a one-time thing? She's not sure yet, but she's going to keep a close eye on it. And I'm sure in a few more months we will hear about the next payment. And if that's down as well, that's where I think she might start saying, let's be careful in planning for the 2026 budget.
So this could be indicating folks pulling back on spending in the county, at least for the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're waiting to see the numbers in Q2.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, at this point, it's not something where you need to run for the hills.
Well, anybody in the legislature running for the hills or alarmed, or just like, let's keep an eye?
Just everyone's sort of expected that we were going to plateau around the turn of the year, just not because of any national politics or anything like that. It was really because of just how we saw the numbers going. The increases were getting smaller, and now we're seeing a decrease in the sales tax collection. So that doesn't mean that we're not going to go back up again. But if you ask any economist, and you'll see sort of that sine wave, you know, things go up, things go down, things go up, things go down.
I'm just wondering also if 2024 was a really big year for the county in terms of sales tax, is this a natural thing that happens? Yeah, also, it's winter in the Catskills, Sullivan Catskills. Is that also sort of maybe?
It could be, but yeah, we collected the most sales tax last year we ever collected, over $80 million, right. Which when I started in the county just less than a decade ago, we were barely, I don't think we had even cracked $40 million in sales tax. So we have seen a meteoric rise in sales tax over the past few years. Of course, we've also seen a huge increase in expenses as well. So we can't just say, oh, it'll come back down to normal when expenses aren't where they were that long ago as well. So it's something that just requires very prudent fiscal planning, which, listen, he's my boss, but I really am proud to say that the county manager, Josh Potosik, is that kind of guy. He is very much a fiscal conservative in terms of planning out the budget because, let's face it, he's a taxpayer too, raising a young family in Sullivan County. So he gets it. But we also have many, many, many mandated costs that have only increased. So it's, as usual, going to be a balancing act. This year just may be harder than others when we're planning for 2026.
Speaking of Mr. Little, we're talking about HEAP funds and how some of the federal cuts might impact HEAP. Mr. Little yesterday said that he thought that they might be limited and that potentially money for HEAP could run out early to mid-June.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that impacts the HEAP cooling aspect.
That's the
of
cooling benefit. Yes, we're coming to the end of the HEAP heating benefit. And when people hear HEAP, they think it sort of sounds like heat anyway, but it actually stands for the Home Energy Assistance Program, which you're using energy in your home all year long. So what will you be switching to as, if ever, the days warm up here? as I saw snow out on my porch today.
Exactly.
But it will get warmer, if not hot. This summer, and there's a cooling benefit that that the state offers where you can get an air conditioner and help with cooling your home. That application period opens up April 15th. And while you're not necessarily thinking of that right now, what John was trying to say to legislators was the state will probably run out of funds for that sometime in June when you may just start thinking about putting that air conditioner in, but it'll be too late to apply because they'll be out of money. The early bird gets the worm, as they say.
So will that mean that kind of funding for an assistance for folks will, like, sort of ends in June? Or you're saying, like, apply now because you could still get that benefit through the summer,
right,
when you need it?
If you're thinking you need a new air conditioner, go ahead and apply because you may be – more people are eligible for this benefit than you may think. So you can find the way to apply on our website, sullivanny.gov. Also includes the contact info for our HEAP office if you want to talk to a live person. They're there year-round to help. But, yes, what Commissioner Little was trying to say was if you're thinking about that, don't wait. April 15th or sometime thereafter, as soon as possible, start the application process. Our HEAP office can help with that because if you wait until, I feel hot and I can't afford a new air conditioner, and you apply and they're like, sorry, you're eligible, but we got no money left for you.
Right. Any thoughts about supplementing that funding from the state? No.
I mean, we'll help people as much as we possibly can. And I have a feeling that if you're really in dire straits and you reach out to our social services, we'll reach out to our network of personal people who might just say, hey, we'll get you an air conditioner or something. We don't want to leave people in that kind of situation. But let's not even get there. If you're thinking about it ahead of time, that's a good thing. So,
and speaking of weather, the warming centers officially close on April 15th, but the county will help folks if they need warmth and shelter afterwards.
Because year to year, you never know whether April 15th is really the end of the cold weather or not. I know we're all hoping that, but it may not be.
Look outside.
But the warming centers have to have sort of a defined end date because we pay for their supplies and everything, and it just because it's budgeted. So the people are volunteer, but we have had excellent usage of it in Monticello, more so than in years past. Liberty has been not hitting capacity, but it's been used as well. There have been years where we hardly had one or two people any night. And I think we've been averaging at least half a dozen people every night. And no, it's not something for me to get up and dance on top of a car about kind of thing, because these are people in tough situations. But it is good to know that we are there for them in their time of very extreme need. And after these places close, we will still be there for them. Our social services folks will find anyone who needs it a place to shelter for the night. No one who comes to us is going to be left out in the cold.
Will you dance on a car if we meet this challenge?
If you start playing the Fame movie theme, I might do it.
Patricia. Yeah. 845-482-4141 at WJFFradio.org is where you can donate to help us during our spring fund drive. We're speaking to Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government. We'll take a quick break and be back with more. And, oh, an update on where we are with this challenge after this.
Hey, this is Steve Inskeep with NPR's Morning Edition.
And I'm A. Martinez. Today, we're reading some recent NPR donor comments. I am ridiculously excited, Steve.
When are you not? Lindsay writes, "So much great brain stimulation. Thank you."
Wow, that's good to know.
Yeah, I feel stimulated just hearing that.
That we can actually do that to people. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Michelle in Maryland, she says, NPR is my emotional support system. I get news. I get laughter. I learn about the world. So we're like a public radio support animal in a way, Steve, for people.
I believe that. Oh, it's my turn. Kate writes, "I'm addicted. Best addiction ever." Well, I'm not in favor of addictions, but...
But this one's a healthy one. This one's a healthy one, Steve.
Yeah.
Being addicted to NPR, that's not that bad.
That's true.
Whatever your reason for giving is, you can join the community of public radio supporters by donating. Donating right now to this station. Here's how.
Go to WJFFradio.org and make your donation now to end our fund drive.
845-482-4141 is also the number you can call, and you can help us close this out today. We are ending the fund drive today on Friday. It's a $55,000 goal. We're 93% of the way there, and we just closed the challenge. Thank you so much. We closed the challenge thanks to the help of, let me pull this up, sorry, to Jeff and Susan, who are actually in New Orleans. So you can listen. We're worldwide, Dan. Worldwide.
You really are. Wow. Thank you for listening,
I'm
Jeff and
still
Susan.
Trying to find the Fame song. Hold on a second. Let's see if we can find yourself.
Oh, you're gonna. Oh no. Oh no. I knew I shouldn't have said.
It will
anything.
Be dancing before
yes.
the end of this.
Oh gosh.
Call us and help us end that drive today. And now it looks like we just have about $3,500 to go to end the drive. Help us out now. 845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org. Dan Hoost is here from Sullivan County Government, updating us on what's going on in Monticello. You know, we were talking about federal funding and how it might impact some of the HEAP funds. It's also impacting the RSVP program, but good news is that the county is continuing that program. Let's remind folks about the RSVP program.
And yes.
They do.
Retired Senior Volunteer Program, or Retired Senior and Volunteer Program, RSVP, although I shouldn't get too deep into it because that name is going away. That name was licensed to AmeriCorps, which worked with the federal government, and that's all going away, unfortunately. But for us, it's only maybe $60,000 in funding that we're losing. We certainly, the county has funded the program for many, many years, and my understanding is that continues to be the intent. Our volunteers, about a week ago, got a letter from our Office for the Aging Director, Lisa Ann Duell, to say that after 52 years, the federal funding grant supporting the program was not renewed beyond March 31st. But, she said, while this marks a transition, we see it as a tremendous opportunity to grow, evolve, and reimagine what volunteerism can look like in our community. That's what we're doing right now. The program is continuing. Even though the funding has stopped, we continue to operate with all the volunteers that we've had, several, I think we have well over 150, who do all sorts of wonderful things in the community. Our Meals on Wheels program continues as well. Everything that's going on there, we're not leaving anybody in the lurch or any organization in the lurch. However, what this opens up is the tantalizing possibility that we can make this program available to more than just people who are 55 and over. that was always the thing that it could only be offered to people who are 55 years of age or older because it's retired and senior volunteer mm-hmm. program.
So now you can expand it yeah. now that you're in control of it.
Yeah, we're going to figure out a new name for it, and we're going to hopefully in a few weeks announce some new initiatives with it that this lack of funding actually has freed us up to pursue. So we are definitely making lemonade out of lemons with this one, mm-hmm. and I'm excited actually, as is Lisa Ann. We aren't just saying this. I really am excited about where this program can go.
Also, I want to talk about the spring season work that starts to happen in the area with some bridges and roads. Public comment is starting to be accepted on the Willowemoc Bridge replacement through April 22nd. The Willowemoc Bridge is an exceptional bridge. It's a wood bridge.
It's a wooden bridge. I didn't know we still had those, and we're going to keep it going. It's on it's actually a dead-end road up in Willowemoc called Pflugertown Road. I just wanted to say that on the radio anyway. Pflugertown.
If you close your eyes, you can imagine the Swedish chef.
The Pflugertown. So we are getting funding from the Northern Border Regional Commission, and that's because we're in a state that actually is part of the northern border of the United States, and so we qualify even though the county isn't actually on the Canadian border, but we are getting funding for that to entirely replace this bridge with a new bridge providing the same function as the existing bridge. It's a one-lane bridge for use by both cars and pedestrians to cross the Willowemoc over in Pflugertown Road in the town of Neversink at Willowemoc. It's all wood except for the footings, the abutments part of it. It's part of the Timber for Transit program, which I just think is a cool thing that we actually have a Timber for Transit program where we talk about using sustainable, recyclable materials. So, yes, there is coming up there is currently ongoing public comment period. You can send any comment about that if you have any, even if you just want to slap them on the back and say, hey, I love this idea, to NEPA@nbrc.gov. That's NEPA@nbrc.gov. Find that interesting that sounds like Northeast Pennsylvania when it has nothing to do with Northeast Pennsylvania.
All right. Paving in the Sullivan County area has begun. Paving season, as they call it, starting up how are you letting folks know about which roads are impacted?
Yep. We put out on our Facebook page, probably it'll be almost weekly now, what roads are going to be up for paving, unless, of course, there's a slowdown due to weather. But at this point, first up is County Route 52 patch repairs. That's Brickman Road over in Fallsburg near the SYDA Foundation, if you're familiar with that area. We're prepping County Route 58, which is Glen Wild Road between Rock Hill and Woodridge, and County Route 32, Proctor Road between Eldred and Glen Spey, where we're going to do tarring and chipping and paving work there in the coming weeks. We ask people, as we do every year, but we need to repeat it because people can get impatient. Please be patient. Pay attention to the work zone signs. Our flaggers' instructions, our flaggers sometimes are in fear of their very lives, the way people act around some of these work zones. Listen, if you're in a real rush, that's one of the reasons I put this out there. Here's where the work is going to happen. You're in a rush. Seek an alternate route. Right. Don't bother our flaggers and our folks working on the roads.
They're doing their job.
Yep.
Also want to note it's National Public Health Week. And thanks to the public health team there.
Just a shout out to our public health team led by our new public health director, Dr. Jesse Moore, who gave a wonderful update yesterday to the Health and Human Services Committee. We have a huge amount of people who are working there. And these aren't just what you might think of, like the nurses going out in the community with our home health program, which they're wonderful. I've been with them on that. We also got epidemiologists working on the infectious and transmittable diseases. We've got outreach folks who are talking about everything from rabies to ticks. And helping create the rabies vaccination clinic. So we are so grateful for them. These are the people who truly do keep us well.
And before we go, I wanted to acknowledge a special acknowledgement for Dick
Martinkovic.
Martinkovic. I knew I would do that incorrectly. He was former public safety commissioner, fire coordinator, honored recently at a statewide conference.
Yeah, he just passed away a few weeks ago. Was a guy I got to work with, was very fortunate to work with for many, many years. And he was honored, his family was honored actually as well, at the New York State Fire Coordinators Conference upstate, where they gave an engraved clock actually to his widow and his family there. We all remember him very well because he did a lot for the county, not only as a county employee, he was also a longtime firefighter in Liberty.
Dan Hoos, Sullivan County Government, joins us every Friday. Thank you so much. I've got a little bit of a good news, bad news situation for you here. We have fame. It's not the Irene Cara version. It's the David Bowie version.
I didn't know he did a David Bowie.
Well, he didn't do the musical.
This sounds
like
her.
Wait, this is.
Yeah, this sounds like
her. It says David Bowie fame on here. Okay, you did get it right. That's why I was like, it says David Bowie fame. And I was like, wait a minute. Remember that song you did, fame? But anyway, are you going to dance or not? That's the question.
Okay. Thank goodness we're on radio here.
Where's the video?
Yeah. No. Where's the car?
Why are we not multi-platform?
If you remember the movie, they get up on top of cars in New York City, which I always thought, how rebellious of them. I want to do that. That was as far as my defiance of culture went. So,
remember the other songs in that musical, Hot Lunch? Mm-hmm. Remember that one?
Yes, yes. I remember that one. And what was it? What was the final one?
We'll have to look it
up. I Sing the Body Electric.
I Sing the Body Electric.
There we go. There it is. Go. Yes. Oh, wow.
I Celebrate the Me Yet to Come.
Yes.
Dan Hoos, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. I don't know about the listeners, but my pleasure.
845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org. If this is the content you want. Thank you so much. We are going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Radio Chatskill after this.
I'm Brooke Gladstone from On the Media. And as you can deduce from the name of the show, we track the evolving media, the right and the wrong of it, across myriad platforms. But the truth is, the best thing about it, and I'm talking here about the fact-based media, the independent media, is that it's here at all. Over the 3 decades I've been watching, there have been countless bombardments and forays and brawls, but I've never seen it attacked with such focus and ferocity as now. Especially our own little corner of it, public media. Your media, we hope. You know, you could stand up for public media right here at home. Start a monthly gift or add to your existing one. Here's how you do it.
Support Radio Catskills Spring Fun Drive at WJFFradio.org.
Your donation is more than a contribution. You're making that direct investment in the health of the community, and your gift helps support local news and culture and all these great local connections that you hear right here. I want to thank folks who've donated to help us meet that challenge from the Calicoon Business Association. Thank you to the Calicoon Business Association for that. And there's more information about all the activity in that hamlet, a very busy hamlet here in New York, at visitcalicoon.com. That means we are at about, again, $3,500 to go. So just a little more than that, I think. But you can donate to get us to the $55,000 goal before the end of the day here, 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Getting great comments online, too, and also people calling in anonymous today saying, thanks so much for all you do, providing information to our community. Keep up the great work, from Margaret. Thank you, Margaret. From Carol, saying thank you so much for all the local programming and especially for your support of the arts. And Conrad saying WJFF makes us all better people. Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. Dan Hoos makes us all great too. He's still here. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And New York's budget is now on track to be 2 weeks late to break down the stumbling blocks and the state of play in Albany. We are going to get a report from the New York Public News Network Capitol reporters Jun Young Han and Jimmy Vielkind. And they'll get us this report as soon as I pull it up.
Hey, Jung Yoon.
Hi, Jimmy.
So the state budget's still late, and things are starting to get a little spicy. One of the state's top lawmakers, Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, introduced a bill that he seems to think will reduce the governor's leverage. What's going on?
Right. So for context, the speaker's mantra on budget talks is that it should always just be about crunching the numbers, about the dollars and the cents, not about policy. The governor, meanwhile, says she doesn't really care that the budget is late because of policy negotiations. But a late budget is a bigger problem for lawmakers like Speaker Hastie, who don't get paychecks until a budget is passed. So he recently introduced a bill that would let lawmakers get paid if a budget is late because of policy.
Is that actually going to pass?
Well, it seems like it's really just a message that he's trying to send to the governor. It doesn't seem like it will go very far. It's an indication that things aren't going so well in terms of budget negotiations.
You know, the other big development has been prosecutors and people who support the governor coming to the Capitol. They were pushing for changes to the discovery laws, which govern how evidence is shared before a criminal trial. So what did prosecutors have to say, Jenny?
Yeah, this has been one of the biggest sticking points in the budget. And in recent days, a trickle of district attorneys have been coming up to Albany to support the governor's proposal on how evidence is shared. Some of them are sticking to their guns and saying that there should be stricter changes to the rules about how much material needs to be turned over. Others, though, are showing some willingness for compromise. They're saying instead of emphasizing the rules for the materials, they might be more comfortable with just changing the consequences if there is a slip-up.
How did lawmakers take that?
Well, a powerful caucus of Black and Hispanic lawmakers still oppose the governor's proposals writ large. They say that the plan would tip the scales of justice in favor of prosecutors. Hence, the budget negotiations are still in deadlock. On the money side of things, you've been covering that. What's the latest there?
Well, you know, the budget is still big. It's more than $250 billion, and it's built on a pretty rosy economic picture. Remember that Kathy Hochul put this budget together in January. But that picture, it's really dated.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's followed the news in recent days has seen the stock market really take a tumble in response to President Trump's tariffs. Things did start to recover a little bit when Trump paused those new levies.
But it still doesn't look good, no.
No, and it's still, there's a lot of uncertainty. That's important because Wall Street, and we say Wall Street is not Main Street, but Wall Street accounts for about 20% of state income tax revenues. So when the stock market's not doing well, it has big consequences for the state budget. I asked some of the top lawmakers about this and whether it gives them any qualms about pushing ahead with such a big spending plan. Assembly Speaker Hastie said it was too soon to tell, but the budget director, Blake Washington, who works for Governor Hochul, he said it did give him, quote, pause. It still seems likely that the budget will be bigger than what Hochul proposed.
When will we get a sense of how big that budget will be?
Well, it's hard to say, Jung-Yoon. It's pretty week to week right now. We'll have to see what progress report lawmakers get when they return to the Capitol on Tuesday. But here's how two top assembly members, Ed Raw and Gary Pretlow, put it on the chamber floor.
We're a week closer than we were last week. a week closer to what?
That does not sound like good progress.
Yeah, I don't really have a prediction of when this will get done, but I'll see you soon.
Until next time. Thank you, Jimmy.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
That's Jin-Yoon Han and Jimmy Vielkind of the New York Public News Network. And more from the New York Public News Network. This time, an environmental fight that seemed to have ended years ago. It's back in the spotlight because President Donald Trump says he wants to build a proposed gas pipeline. From the New York Public News Network, WSKG's Rebecca Riedelmeyer reports that environmental advocates say they're ready to fight against it again.
Trump has made it pretty clear. He wants to grow the American oil and gas industry.
We will drill, baby, drill.
And he wants to build more pipelines to move all that gas, including one in upstate New York. He brought it up in the Oval Office recently, before a meeting with Governor Kathy Hochul. They were supposed to talk about congestion pricing, the new toll for drivers entering some parts of Manhattan. But Trump also said he wanted this pipeline.
Just a simple pipeline going through an area that wants it.
It's called the Constitution Pipeline, and it was first proposed back in 2012. But it was never built, and here's why. A gas company called Williams planned to build it to transport gas from Pennsylvania through New York's southern tier in Catskills to meet up with other pipelines outside of Albany. It was supposed to bring jobs and lower energy costs in the Northeast. But environmentalists and community members got word about it. And many were appalled. They worried about having to move because of eminent domain, pollution from leaks, and new infrastructure that would enable the continued use of fossil fuels, which contribute to climate change. So they fought back. Environmental lawyer Anne-Marie Garty was one of the movement's leaders.
The first month after I heard about it, I spent every day looking for a way to stop the pipeline.
Garty grew up in New York's Delaware County, where the pipeline was planned to pass through. She loves the area, but she also knew the law, that pipelines are regulated largely by the federal government, which, at the time, approved most projects, allowing gas companies to move in and displace some residents. Garty didn't want that to happen in her community, so she started a group called Stop the Pipeline and organized protests.
Stop the pipeline now!
Some famous people stood by her side, including Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's now part of the Trump administration. He spoke at a rally at the state capitol in 2016.
This is a tired, dinosaur, expired business model.
Garty had a legal strategy, too. She realized the state had the power to refuse the pipeline one key permit under the Clean Water Act. She and other groups organized protests and intervened in the permitting process to bring attention to the water issue. And in 2016, they secured a huge win. New York's Department of Environmental Conservation denied the pipeline that permit. Garty still remembers how two landowners involved in the movement reacted.
The next day, they took one of our Stop the Pipeline signs and they went to the local office of Constitution Pipeline and they wrote on it, "We stopped the pipeline." And they taped it to their door.
The company appealed and appealed. It lost hundreds of millions of dollars because of the ruling. But the courts upheld the decision. Garty's legal approach became an example for activists around the country trying to fight similar pipelines. In the Constitution pipeline battle, it seemed over. But fast forward to the Oval Office a few weeks ago, President Trump now says he wants to build it.
My reaction, and I think everyone who fought its reaction at the time, was like, what the heck is this? Like, no one's even talked about the Constitution in years.
Alex Beauchamp is the Northeast Region Director for Food and Water Watch, a national advocacy organization. He says the fact that Trump discussed the pipeline with Hochul and has brought it up since is concerning.
I think we're sort of forced to take it seriously, sadly, even though it does seem completely crazy.
It's unclear how Trump would pursue building the pipeline. It would still need that Clean Water Act permit from the state, and Hochul has said publicly she is not interested in revisiting the issue. Her office would not answer further questions about it. Williams, the company that first proposed the pipeline, has said it would move forward only if there's support from New York. Still, many environmentalists worry Trump will push ahead, like Virginia Kennedy, an environmental advocate based in Otsego County. She was around for the first round of the pipeline fight, and she thinks Trump could revive it.
I mean, you just have to call these pipelines zombie pipelines. That's the term.
Kennedy has been organizing a group to protest Trump's policies. She says they're ready to take on the pipeline, but that fight takes a toll.
Some days you just cry, but, you know, power never cedes itself. So you fight, and you fight on.
More than 200 advocacy groups recently sent a letter to Hochul and other governors, urging them to push back against any proposed new pipelines in the Northeast. Trump has said he doesn't want to have to use the, quote, extraordinary powers of the federal government to get it done. But he said, if he has to, he will. In Ithaca, I'm Rebecca Rettelmeyer for the New York Public News Network.
Thanks to Rebecca for that report, and thanks to the folks at the New York Public News Network. That's that group of 13 public radio stations throughout New York State. We're part of that, and because we're part of that, we're able to bring you this news that affects us all over, from Albany into Delaware County, up into the Southern Tier, and other places. And we can do that because of your support during our spring fund drive, especially today, as we try to end this drive. We're 93% of the way there in the spring fund drive. Let's make that happen sooner rather than later. Call 845-482-4141, or you can donate at wjffradio.org. As we celebrate our 35th anniversary, we're continuing to provide you that news and culture and all the engaging conversations that make our region stronger. Donate now, 845-482-4141, or go to wjffradio.org. More Radio Chatskill after a break.
It's Leila Faldin from NPR's Morning Edition. The demonization of fact-based journalism is one of democracy's biggest threats. This aversion to truth has taken hold as the number of local newsrooms has dwindled, leaving reams of disinformation to fill the void. In public radio, we have a responsibility to counteract disinformation. This station is an oasis amid all the noise and fiction. Having a reporter at the school board meeting, at City Hall, that is our resistance to the undermining of a free press. We resist by being there, by providing platforms for people to see themselves reflected and to see difference. We resist by building bridges and by holding people to account. We do it thanks to you. You give us the tools we need to fight attacks on truth by donating to this station. Here's how.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
And as we face these challenges, your donations help ensure our voice continues to thrive and remain independent no matter what the future holds. Thank you for helping us reach our $55,000 spring fund drive goal. We're almost there. 93% of goal has been met, and we're going to meet the rest of it today with your help at 845-482-4141 or online at wjffradio.org. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Train enthusiasts and families are in for a treat this weekend as the Hawley Fire Department hosts a model train show and sale on Sunday in Hawley, Pennsylvania. With more than 80 tables on display, visitors can browse model train sets, accessories, and collectibles, as well as detailed showcases and interactive exhibits, including a vintage American Flyer layout from the 1950s and 60s. Our own train enthusiast, Jason Dole, spoke to Bill Delling, member of the Hawley Fire Department.
This spring show is this coming Sunday, April 13th, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
So for people that aren't familiar with what a train show is, you want to describe what it is that's available there?
Yes. This show, we will have approximately 85 tables of all types of model railroad and regular railroad stuff, books, magazines, scenery products, model train sets, individual freight cars, locomotives, scenery items, everything, track, just about everything related to model trains. And we will also have different artifacts from the regular railroads years ago. Some people bring in lanterns and books and magazines, and we will have a dealer from the Sullivan County area with the O&W Historical Society. And as you know, back in that area over there used to be a big O&W railroad activity.
Yeah, and listeners that are familiar with any of the stops along Sullivan County line into Delaware County that may be familiar with, such as the station that's still there in Calicoon, all the way on up into, Ferndale, Liberty, Parksville, Roscoe, Livingston Manor, out to Delaware County, Cooks Falls, and beyond. That whole line, that was O&W, all those stations.
Yes, and also in the Carbondale and Scranton.
Mm-hmm. So these are vendors, too. Like, this isn't just you're putting on the sale yourself. You open up the table space to vendors that come from all different places, then.
Yes, vendors, they are both in the model train business and individual people who want to get rid of their trains and, just clear out their inventory. It's open to anybody.
So after I talked to you before your last sale in the autumn, I talked to you on the radio here, and then I came out on the day of the sale to check it out for myself, and I was really surprised. I was, like, totally blown away. First off, it was a much bigger sale, much bigger event than I had pictured happening there at the firehouse, but I didn't even get into the place. I see people like streaming out with like entire locomotives and train sets in their hands, happy as anything, and leaving the place. I said, wow. And they were people of like all different ages, all different backgrounds. And I get in there was like table after table of all sorts of model train equipment in all different scales, and the N scale, the HO scale, the bigger gauges. It was really something to see. I mean, this is a pretty big event in train circles, huh?
Yeah, we are the only train show in Wayne and Pike County. This show will put us up to or over the 19,000 in attendance.
Wow, and that's across how many years you've been doing this?
I started it 26 years ago.
So 19,000 folks coming through in 26 years. It's a big event. And also one of the things that I was getting at, like, I don't actually actively do model railroading. And if I'm trying to stay out of the hobby, this is a bad place to go because I really started seeing things like, oh, I'd like to get that or I'd like to get that. It seems like this is the sort of thing that would appeal to people that are already into model railroading. But it's also pretty friendly to beginners too, right?
Yes, that, and believe it or not, we have some women that come in by themselves just to look at stuff. They're not in the hobby. It's just something that they enjoy. And I don't want to forget, we will have an old American flyer layout from the 50s and 60s where kids and even adults can interact with the old accessories. They press buttons and different things operate, and, you know, kids get a kick out of it, and some adults too.
Yeah, so in addition to what you have there for people to purchase in terms of, you know, model railroading and even other, you know, train aficionado memorabilia, even people that aren't coming to get something, they can come and just look at what you have, including active operating train layouts.
Yes, a lot of people come just to have something to do and look at this stuff, and some of it brings back memories of train shows that they had. And you know, it's just something to do, and, you know, and you're right. A lot of people, they enjoy every show.
Now, where do the funds go? What are you raising funds for?
Okay, all proceeds go to the Hawley Fire Department, and that goes into the fund, and it can go for anything from safety equipment to hose, or, you know, I mean, it's a small part of paying for it, but it still helps. But anything that a volunteer fire department would need, helmets, boots, anything, safety equipment, you name it, and, you know, it helps out, you know.
All right, so let's just remind people one more time, where is it happening and when?
Okay, it's the Hawley Fire Department, Sunday, April 13th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Admission is $3 for an adult, children under 12 free with an adult, and like I said, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
All right, Bill, I wish you the best of luck, and we'll let people know about the sale.
Thank you, and all is invited. We'd like to see you at the show. Thank you.
Thanks to Jason Dole, our resident train enthusiast, speaking to Bill Denning, member of the Hawley Fire Department. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. It's not going to do it for our spring fun drive, though. We're almost there. Joining us here in the studio right now to talk about the final countdown, it is Mimi Bradley, development manager, with an update of where we are on $5,000 Friday, the final day of the fun drive, the final countdown.
I love this song so much. It's so perfect. Well, I have some really incredible news. I have the news that is going to end this fun drive.
What?
We are rolling out right now, right this moment, thanks to our incredible board of trustees, a monster challenge of $1,850.
Wow, okay.
So this is thanks to Sally, Amy, Leif, Katie, Dale, Chrissy, Tanya, Ilya, Jill, Pete, and Don.
Oh my gosh.
And when we make this challenge, Tim, the fun drive is over.
Wow. Okay. That is it. That is heading to Venus.
And I know. It's really great. So listen, listeners, if you haven't given yet, this is the moment. Let's keep this momentum going. Let's finish early. Why not?
Let's go home and take a nap.
I would love a nap. 845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org. Please donate.
So it's a monster challenge of what? $1,850, right?
Yep.
$1,850. If we raise that, then our great board of trustees are matching that. Mm-hmm. And that ends the drive. Oh,
that
my gosh.
845-482-4141,
WJFFradio.org. What amount of that can you do to help us get this done? 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Mimi, thank you.
Thank you.
And we will check in later, but that's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for your support. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
My name is Danielle Kurtzleben, and I am a White House correspondent at NPR. I've covered a lot of elections. I have talked to countless voters.
all of those conversations have very much given me a grounding in what is important to everyday Americans. Trump and his administration and his allies are flooding the zone very effectively right now. I try to find the things that other people have not noticed. Stories that are maybe undercovered or nuances of stories that are undercovered. The way that a certain policy is being implemented, the way a policy affects someone. I really like to say things plainly and try to get around not just jargon, but sort of the Washington and power way of looking at things. If a politician is lying or is talking around something, I just want to give it to them straight. Support journalism that holds the powerful to account. Donate to this station today, and thank you.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill. Quick lost dog report. White Pyrenees answering to the name of Thelma. Last seen going down the steps on Maple Avenue in Jeffersonville last night at 11. She's wearing a brand new Blue Max and Neo collar. If you've seen Thelma, call the station. We'll let you know how to get in touch with the owner. It's 11 o'clock.